Welcome to Hack the Entrepreneur, the show which reveals the fears, habits, and inner battles behind big-name entrepreneurs and those on their way to joining them. Now here is your host, John Naster.
Hey, hey, this is Hack the Entrepreneur. Thank you so much for joining me again today. I am your host, John Naster, but you can call me Johnny. My guest today is a father, author, marketer, speaker, and an entrepreneur. I actually met my guest over dinner with about 10 other entrepreneurs here in Toronto. And when we got to talking about his business, I was quickly fascinated by it. He's been an entrepreneur for over 17 years. And for the past nearly 9 years, he's been the founder and CEO of PLR.me, a private label rights content provider servicing health and wellness professionals. What does that mean? Well, in short, it means he's built this impressive team who create content and software, and over 40,000 professionals have rebranded and used this content and software and used it within their own businesses. In this conversation, we discuss content creation, using affiliates to grow your business, and signing international licensing deals. Now, let's hack. I want to take a moment to thank today's sponsor, ShipStation. When you're selling physical products online, getting your orders out the door quickly can be tough. That's why you need ShipStation.com. Whether you're using Shopify, Squarespace, Etsy, BigCommerce, or WooCommerce, you can track all of your sales across more than 75 sales channels from one simple interface. Or you can also do it from anywhere you happen to be with your ShipStation mobile app. And yes, it's absolutely available for Apple and Android devices. ShipStation helps you get orders fast and get them to your customers faster. With ShipStation, you'll ship more in less time and with the best rates available. It's no wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. Right now, try ShipStation free for 30 days and get an additional month free only if you use my promo code HACK. Don't wait. Go to ShipStation.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in HACK. That's ShipStation.com. Enter HACK. ShipStation. Make ship happen. We are back with another episode of Hack the Entrepreneur. And today we have another very, very special Canadian guest, Ronnie. Thank you for joining me.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Absolutely my pleasure, man. Absolutely my pleasure. I think we're going to have a lot of fun.
Oh, we will. Nice. We'll always have fun.
What do you say? Should we jump into this?
Sounds good.
Excellent. Ronnie, as an entrepreneur, can you tell me what is the one thing that you do that you feel has been the biggest contributor to your successes so far?
Well, I think a lot of people are really good at one thing, and I've never been that person. I've been sort of the Renaissance man. So I think the biggest win for me in business has been a deep understanding of a lot of things. And I can talk programming to programmers and marketing and design and customer support and technology and psychology and all of that stuff. And that's been a huge win in this kind of multidisciplinary, you know, online, offline world that we live in. Doesn't mean I do all of these things. It just means I can really deeply understand it. So, you know, I can completely be feeling comfortable talking to programmers in one meeting and then flip directly over to, you know, customer support stuff and marketing and so on. And, you know, I think that there's a negative connotation with someone like that, like a Renaissance man, you know, the saying like jack of all trades, master of none. That's always bugged me because I've always been like this, you know, like I've always been good at a lot of different things. And even in school, it's like, well, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to do science? Or are you going to do business? Are you going to do music? Or are you going to do, you know, history? And I've always been sort of good at a lot of different things, but I think that adds a lot of great value. You know, I can see the complete picture. I can piece a lot of different pieces of the puzzle together that maybe some people can't see or don't understand. So that I think is the big win for me. And I sometimes look back at, you know, way back in the Renaissance time when you have like Leonardo da Vinci, and I am nowhere near his brilliance, but someone who could understand engineering and art and design and all of those things together. And that's how we kind of have these beautiful pieces of architecture and art from one person.
Right. Okay. So this is interesting. And this is a real, it's sort of, I'm going to say like a fork in the road where founders either go your direction or that like be good at your little tiny aspect of it and then just get rid of all the rest of it. So that's cool that it, I like that you take your path to it, but to say that you've always sort of been like this, like I'm assuming, but I would like you to tell me, but there's no like sort of innate ability. I don't think anybody's born with innate ability to know programming, to know marketing, to know customer support, to know hiring, to know scaling across like Facebook or whatever it happens, whatever new thing you happen to be going into. Ooh. So is this something still that you are actively, like when you see your business has to go a direction, do you first, are you the one who leads the way to like understand it and then sort of build around it?
Yeah, I think that's really where you hit the nail on the head. It's not that I think it starts with a good foundation of a thirst for learning, like a thirst for understanding. And that's what's happened because, you know, I would enjoy all the different subjects in school. I would fully invest myself. And that's the same way in my business and in talking to other people. I'm fully invested when it comes to the programming. I'm not going to just say, oh, I don't get it. I'm going to just run away from it. If I don't get it, I'm going to read more about it. I'm going to learn more about it. I'm going to ask questions. And so I've developed that. Definitely, I, in my business, steer the ship. And that's really the job of the entrepreneur, right? We have to have the vision. So the vision spans multiple discipline areas, you know, the programming, marketing, design, all that stuff. And it's that thirst for learning. If I don't know the answer, I'll ask. And that's okay. Like I'm humble enough to say, I have no idea what you're talking about. Can you explain it? And then I'll learn. And I pick up on that. And it just continues to build up in my brain of all the different scenarios, options, ideas. And by having an understanding, even if it's just a little bit of all the different aspects of the business, it's led to new creative ideas. It's led to new ways of doing things that maybe I wouldn't have thought of if I didn't understand the, you know, the technical challenges or the possibilities.
Do you ever have a fear of becoming a bottleneck in any aspects of it?
Oh, and I am totally the number one bottleneck. Absolutely. All right, then. I've learned that though over the years, and I've gotten so much better at that. Because, you know, it's not so much that I have to decide everything. It's just that I want to be able to understand it. And in doing so, it's led to new ideas. I mean, for example, let's the software. My main product line is selling done-for-you content to health and wellness professionals. Now, most of my competition stick to just content. Here's content. You can brand it. You can tweak it. You can sell it as your own. Great. Well, I saw, because I have an eye in the customer service, I'm not doing the customer service, but I had to keep my eye on it. And I talk to my team, hey, what are people asking for? What are they struggling with? How can we help them do things better? I found out that the things that they were struggling with are things like branding a PDF. Like, how do I put my logo on it? How do I create a presentation? How do I create a graphic that matches my style of branding and color scheme and all of that stuff? Well, I could direct people into the do-it-yourself world. You know, hey, go get Photoshop and learn Photoshop. But no one's going to do that. And so instead, I saw, okay, there's an opportunity here. If people are struggling with these things, could I get, you know, could I quarterback the programming team to create tools that can automate this stuff for people? And over the years, we've created a dozen tools. Things like branding an image automatically, branding a PDF automatically, creating presentations automatically, creating a blog post and scheduling 1,000 blog posts if you wanted to automatically, creating these little tools that never would have happened had I not understood the different aspects of the business and talk to the different people, right? Customer service gives the, you know, you hear about the problem, that sparks the idea then goes to the programming team and they complete it. Up until recently, I've been the one kind of keeping all the team separate. Customer service does not talk to programmers, does not talk to marketers, does not talk to, you know, designers, and that doesn't work. So I've removed myself from that problem, you know, because of the amazing tools like Slack. We can have these Slack rooms. We talk about things. We figure out new situations that happen that, you know, hey, well, maybe we don't need Ronnie. Let's just figure this out on our own. And so that's definitely been my problem, being a bottleneck. But by sort of facilitating that, now the whole team starts to think in a more cooperative way.
Right, right. Exactly. And I mean, those tools can be a crutch as much as they can be like a freeing sort of thing that allows us to do these things. But it seems like you've found the balance where they are enabling you to sort of step out of the middle and let the teams actually do what they do best, which is develop products for your customers.
Exactly. Yeah.
So we're looking at PLR.me now. It's like almost nine years into it. It's a really well-developed like publishing company, software company, tools company, helping tens of thousands of people. But can we go back, Ronnie? Let's go back 9 years if we can. Yeah. And can you kind of take us to the inception or how this sort of came to be?
Yeah, it's funny because I feel like always I like doing the opposite of other people. And I think that's exactly what happened 9 years ago. Because 9 years ago, I was doing stress coaching. I was a stress consultant. I was on CBC and radio stations in the US and Canada talking about stress. And one of the things that I realized is in order to grow, I need more content. That's what Google wants. That's, you know, Facebook wasn't really big then, at least not to the same level. But I needed content to get noticed. And that's how I got noticed on the media. I would create content. They would do a search. They would find me. They would book me on their shows. But I was the biggest struggle there, right? Again, I was the biggest bottleneck. I couldn't write enough stuff and publish it as frequently as I wanted to. And I was going down the freelance route, you know, hiring people. And it was good, but expensive and time consuming. And then you deal with problems. You deal with delays. You deal with, you know, in one case, I hired a guy who took like 6 months to write some newsletters and found out that they just plagiarized stuff, you know? So it's like, what is going on? And so I realized this just sucks. A friend tipped me off on this idea, just taking a shortcut and using something called private label content or brandable content, which is you pay a license, no different than a stock photo. You get a stock photo, you license it, other people can use it, but you can tweak it, make it your own, customize it, add it to whatever marketing materials you create. And so that's what I started searching. I started searching for private label content and I found a bunch of stuff. And I realized that all of that stuff was junk. Like it was like really poorly written, or it was like text files. It didn't look very nice. And it would just take me long. I would just rewrite the entire thing, which would be a lot slower than just writing it from scratch. And that's when a lot of my colleagues were saying like, hey, like, how are you doing this? Like outsourcing thing and content creation. And I said, well, you know, it's just natural to me to putting all these pieces together. This private label stuff was junk. Maybe I should just start my own. And that's what I did. I ended up creating my own private label company for health and wellness coaches. And we created not just, you know, ugly text files, but, you know, beautiful designed PDFs and books and different types of content and graphics that no one else was doing at the time. It was just completely revolutionary at that time. And we've grown and grown since then.
How did you know that it was like this idea of sort of brandable content, private label was like lots of times I think people would look at a market where everything's kind of done really junkily, terribly, and think that maybe there's just no money in it to do it properly. Like, was there that went through your head, or were you just kind of knew that there must be money in this?
Well, I was, the private label industry has been around for a while. It's probably been 15 or 20. I mean, even before that, if you look at Walmart and all these different places, you can go to Costco, get a Kirkland brand soap, and Walmart, you can get a Great Value brand toothpaste and all this stuff. They're not making it. It's private label. The concept has been around. And even in terms of private label content, it's been around. You look at AP news and all that stuff. It's licensed content. The concept is solid. The competition was just weak. It was very weak. People who just didn't want to write for a single person would write and sell the rights to the license to the content. But they were writers, not designers. They didn't understand the concept of making something look pretty and beautiful and how that would affect sales. And honestly, the best proof of concept was putting up a sales page. It was literally over the course of a couple of weeks, threw up a sales page. I didn't even have the sales page finished. Like literally there was like insert testimonial here, insert link here. And like, it was not done. I don't even know how. Someone did a Google search, found it, and bought it even with an incomplete sales letter. The buy link was working, so that was good. She bought and she stayed a member for like 4 or 5 years. And that was the big tip off for me. Like even with an offer that was not fully complete formed, it just took off.
And how long did it take before it became like your full-time business?
About a year, about maybe 6 or 8 months after we launched. So the process was launching it to some small groups, just some, you know, forums and different places like that. And then a couple of months after that, tapping into some bigger affiliates, people who were in the space selling private label content themselves, you know, getting them to promote. And that's when it really took off because the affiliates would come in and say, "What, this stuff is really good. I really like your approach." And they started promoting. And when they promoted, it was, you know, they were bringing their firepower with them. And that's when we were able to grow and expand and turn to, you know, creating more content, more the training. We'd get found on Google. We'd get found. We would disseminate that training to affiliates. They would promote it more. And it just continued to grow from there.
Nice. And the so affiliates were sort of the big sort of inflection point of growth at the beginning. Now, almost 9 years later, how has sort of like your customer acquisition changed?
Well, it's still predominantly affiliates and just general SEO, just being found on Google. Mm-hmm. In the last year, we did ramp up some Facebook advertising, and that's worked very well. But I've always found that when it comes to customer acquisition, if I can't master one, how could I, like, I you can't do five, you know, like,
right.
And I've heard that so many times from so many people. Once I was able to nail down the affiliates and the SEO, that's when I added on the Facebook stuff. It's not really about needing 10 different growth channels. It's just about having one or two that work really well and then going from there. And so I've seen that mistake. I mean, I've tried that. Oh, this is working well. Let me start a new business now. Nope. Nope. That did not work. You know, like too many things going on at the same time, not possible to grow.
But also you sort of, because that is an urge as entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. as creatives, right? We want to just constantly be creating new things. It seems like you've kind of mastered that within PLR.me because of the fact that, I mean, just going through your product suite and the things that you offer, there's a huge number of things. So it's not like you're just like, we only create one thing and we're going to do it over and over. You can just create things under this umbrella.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is probably shocking to most people, but we have over 11,000 products. So, you know, like, it's not like I'm doing nothing. And most of that's the team writing and editing and researching and designing and all that stuff. But yeah, we have a lot of products and we have a dozen software tools, but it's all servicing one, you know, audience. It's under one umbrella. It's not about having 12 different websites and, you know, dealing with all of the pains and struggles with all of that. It's really just focused on the one thing.
Exactly. But you still get sort of that, you get to sort of solve that urge to build,
exactly.
Which is nice. So let's kind of, like, what size is the team actually at this point?
About a dozen people.
Wow.
And all aspects. So, you know, there's about 5 people on the content team with a content manager and then writers, researchers below that. And then there's a designer, there's customer service. There is 3 or 4 developers doing different pieces of the business. And then there's me. So, and I also had other people help on a freelance basis, maybe to create some videos or, you know, marketing materials or some Facebook funnels, things like that. But that's pretty much the team.
Right. So let's sort of move into projects. So 11,000 products, each of those is a sort of project in its own right between building it, developing it, and then like marketing it and selling it. But with a team of 12, you have now learned to take yourself out of the middle of every sort of conversation and discussion to allow things to move smoother and quicker. Mm-hmm. What is your process, like as the CEO still, in determining right now, like that a new product of any sort that you want to build, say a software tool that you want to develop, what is the process of sort of taking in the information, sort of filtering through it, and then deciding that this product is actually worth yours, your team's time, energy, and resources?
Well, the first thing is I eliminate the thinking that it's not possible, because I've realized over years of doing this that pretty much anything that someone dreams up is totally possible. Now, whether it's feasible, that might be different, but it's totally possible. So if a customer comes to us and says, hey, you know, I like your products, but can I choose which specific ones that I want? You know, because the way it works currently is you get a bucket of new resources every month. So if you're a monthly member, you're subscribing, you get new content every month, but you can't choose what you want. So, you know, there's a pro and a con there. The con is you don't get to choose what you want. The pro is you get good stuff every single month and at a good discounted rate, but you don't choose. So there's pros and cons there. Now, when you hear that from a customer, they might say, well, you know, can I choose what I want? I want to be able to choose the topics that I want. I want certain types of materials. Maybe I want affirmations. Maybe I want more books. Maybe I want more promotional graphics. Well, if you have the thinking that it's possible, then you can evaluate whether you pursue it or not. And so that's what we've done. You know, over the years, if someone says, hey, can I, like, how do I brand a PDF? Well, I'm not going to. In the past, it was go buy Adobe Acrobat or, you know, go hire someone and let them do it. That's not really a good, elegant solution. What if instead we can just take a simple open source software, tweak it a little bit, someone uploads a PDF, puts the text that they want, hits go, and it brands it the way they want, puts the watermark, puts the logo, puts their, you know, call to action on the PDF. Like, why can't we do that? We can. You just have to have that open, the openness to pursue it. And so that's what we've been working on lately, actually. It's been a several month project, hearing over and over again, can I choose the products that I want? I know you have the store, but I want maybe certain things, like certain topics or certain types of materials. And the idea hit us that, well, there are stock photo sites where you choose one stock photo at a time. You don't get, you know, 500 stock photos and say, here's a bucket of stock photos. They're all dogs. Maybe you don't want dogs, but too bad for you. Like, it doesn't work like that, right? You choose the photo that you want. That's what we're doing. We're creating a stock photo marketplace, but for content. You can go one by one, choose one article at a time, choose one book at a time, and buy and, you know, purchase that one item at a time. And that's a big ass project. Like, it's a big deal because we're talking about 11,000 products, indexing and searching every word in there and categorizing it properly, and then dealing with the whole billing system to making sure that, you know, you, like, it's a big project. It takes a big team to do it, but you have to be able to break it down and say, okay, is this little chunk here possible? Can we do this? Is it feasible? Is it going to cost too much to do? Or is it worth doing? Because long term, it's going to make people's lives so much better, happier, and increase sales.
Right. It seems like would be worth doing. Because when you first said 11,000 products, I was like, wow, lots of companies have the problem of not enough sort of products to sell. And then all of a sudden it's like 11,000. Like, how do I, as a new customer, how do I even sift through that. It?
Yeah, exactly.
So exactly. 11,000 products. Are you still the person, as the founder, as the CEO, that has decided yes on every single one of those products?
No, that's what the content team is for. Because some products are simple. It might be an article. Like, an article is a product for us. Because a client can say, yes, I'm a parenting expert. I want this parenting article so that I can, you know, post it in my members area or turn it into, you know, a video or a webinar or something. Each piece of content is a product. So some are longer, like a book, but some are graphics and some are short. But I, like, after the first year, I couldn't do it anymore. I couldn't read, you know, 100 new resources every single month. Like, it was just not possible for me. So we have an editor. They talk to the writers. The writers come up with different topics, angles, what's current, you know, what's seasonal. And then we create topics, content resources around that.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I was going to say you're like an absolute, like, decision-making expert if you've decided yes or no on all of
No, but what we have done is created a structure, and I'm all about systemizing and automating and outsourcing. It's so powerful in the business. That's really the other big secret weapon, is you have to create a framework. Our writing training center that we created is insane. Like, it is honestly stupid crazy. And I fully admit that that's the reason why probably 80% of people who apply to be our writers leave before they even write a single word, because we have very strict requirements. We talk about, you know, the proper font sizes and I mean, everything, including the titles, the kinds of topics that we cover. And the people who stick with us, the people who stay, they stay for years because they're committed. They realize that we're committed to them, And we are like, our reputation in terms of the quality is very important. So our hiring process is a big pain in the ass. But when people come, they stay, and they stay for years because the framework is there. They know exactly how it's supposed to be formulated, how it's supposed to look, how it's supposed to sound. And it just makes the whole process easier. But if you're not used to that, if you just want, you know, a quick buck, hey, good riddance, we don't want you.
Fair enough. Fair enough. And so with this sort of framework you put in place for deciding on new projects. So let's obviously not talk about, say, an article, because the content team takes care of that now, but like and not one so big that it's sorting your website, because that seems absolutely something that is necessary as part of the evolution of the company, but sort of like a bigger software project or something. When you have now taken everything in, decided that it's sort of like, you've decided that it's not only possible, because you know that everything is possible, but it's also feasible. Mm-hmm. You've decided to do it. You put all your time, energy, and your team's time, energy, and resources into it. You go ahead, you set up the metrics for success, and it becomes obvious that it doesn't work. Then you hit this thing where, like, we fall into this trap where, as entrepreneurs, right? I guess as humans in general, that one of our greatest struggles is that fear of being wrong, making mistakes and failing, especially in front of our team at this point, as the leader, as the person in at the helm. So Ronnie, can you tell me how to make those big decisions, send your team in a direction, have everything come back that it just wasn't the right thing to do, and then move forward from sort of being wrong in front of your team?
Absolutely. So this actually happened fairly recently, and it was, thankfully, we caught it before it got worse. And I'll explain the story with leaving out some of the details because it does involve another company. But we were licensing another software company's course software. And everything was checking out. Things were looking okay. We spent several months working with them, creating content, you know, making it work with their system. We agreed upon all of the details, the financing, the licensing fees, everything. And all of a sudden, we're about to launch. We're probably about maybe a couple of weeks away from launch. I begin teasing our customers about what's coming and giving them an idea of what's ahead. And all of a sudden, this company says, oh, you know, we are going to take 50% of all of your product sales. I said, that's not what we agreed on. Like, this is not at all, like, we created the content. Like, you know, you created the software. We're licensing your software. You're not getting a fee of our content. And at that point, I realized there is, like, I can't trust this company. I mean, they're not local. Any legal recourse I have is, I mean, I'm not going to get stuck in some international court. Like, this is just not a good idea. And I was at a crossroads. I thought either A, I give him what he wants, and it's just margins. It would not be worth it for us. Or B, have to pull the plug and realize, you know what? I just did not sniff out this guy and this company properly. I have to suck it up. I've got to tell the team, hey, everything you've done was a complete waste. Tell the customers, actually, this is not happening. And thankfully, we hadn't launched the product yet, because then we didn't have to necessarily refund people and deal with all of that stuff. But we had to admit failure. We had to say, you know what? Like, this is not going to come. And it's now going to take several months until something else comes. We had to tell the team, you know, this is what's happening, and own up to the mistake and decision-making, and just own up to the fact that, hey, you know what? I'm vulnerable too. Like, I screwed up. Like, clearly, I didn't do my job in vetting things out. And it sucked. Definitely some customers were peeved, but they also understand. Like, they don't want a half-baked product. They don't want, you know, something that we're not going to stand behind. And that's the reality. I just had to pull the plug. And sometimes that's the hardest part. It's, you know what? I'm so far. I shouldn't, like, let's just figure out a deal. Let's just make this work. And sometimes I've made that mistake too many times, and it's better to just pull the plug when you know you're wrong, when things are just not right. And maybe it's personnel and that person that you hire that's just not working out, or something you created, a product that's just not working, it's not selling well. Sometimes you have to pull the plug, and that's okay.
It is. It's really hard, but it is okay. looking back sort of over the course of setting up that deal from the initial sort of conversation all the way through, looking back on it now, was there any things that might have tipped you off that this was going to go off the rails?
I think that things weren't written up in the same contract style that really should have been. So things were kind of written up in chat. And so everything was there, but it just is not the same as, you know, here's a formal contract and here's the formal arrangement. It wasn't written up, and that's my fault. You know, I really should have advocated for that. You know, you think, oh, well, you know, you've got a gentleman's agreement, everything will be fine. That was a fundamental mistake, absolutely. And then also, I think just the fact that maybe also just culturally we're different. You know, I think that there are sort of assumptions that were made that I didn't pick up on. I don't know. It's certainly, though, that if things were written up in an agreement in a formal way, it would have been much cleaner. You know, everything would have been understood right from the beginning. But it wasn't. And again, I take responsibility for that. It's also made me completely rethink how we do things. It's also why, you know, licensing software is, you have to have an agreement, you know, who owns what, what's on what server, who owns the data, what do you do with the customers and their information. All of that stuff has got to be ironed out and spelled out ahead of time, because you don't want to get into a situation where, oh, why is that person emailing my clients when they shouldn't? Or, you know, what if they go out of business, everything's on their servers, like what's going to happen? And these are things that have to be thought out ahead of time.
Right. And so as you've built your business on licensing, I think on both sides of the table, this isn't going to turn you off of licensing altogether. It's just going to turn you off of doing it improperly.
Right. Exactly. And it's kind of like, you know, you think you can trust people, but you know, you can trust people when everybody's happy. You don't trust people when everybody's unhappy and you know, have different wants and needs. So it's definitely formalized things. And honestly, I think it was providential, because I think in the last few months, since that deal turned sour, we've actually come up with much better solutions, much more elegant, and that long-term are going to take our business over the next, you know, 10 years, not just the next year. It's really just a fundamental shift in the business that never would have happened had that deal gone through.
Exactly. Exactly. Very well said. All right, Ronnie. Well, this has been an absolute blast.
It's been great.
Yeah. I do want to wrap up on one final question for you, if I could.
Sure.
It's this idea I'm working with calling the entrepreneurial gap. So as entrepreneurs, as dreamers, we tend to always project our personal success into the future. Meaning, no matter what we seem to accomplish from the outside, we can look really, really successful to others. But to ourselves, it's always in 1 month when you hit that like revenue metric, in 6 months when you launch that best-selling book, whatever it happens to be, or that new software product, whatever it happens to be is irrelevant. It's like walking towards the horizon, though the further away you walk, the further away the horizon always gets. You've been at this game for nearly a decade now, possibly before that, before PLR. Me, you've had a lot of successes, and I'm sure, as you just said, you're looking 10 years in the future still. But I would love it right now if you could stop, turn around, and look behind you for the past 10 years, the highs, the lows, the wins, and the losses, and tell me how you feel about this whole journey until today.
I mean, first of all, before PLR, I mean, I was doing like the stress coaching and all that stuff. So it's been over 17 years of having my own entrepreneurial, you know, projects. And so taking all of that into effect, I can say that it's a constant work in progress. I mean, I definitely do not feel that I am where I would like to be. And maybe most people can say that, I don't know. But realistically, I know that my journey has been filled with a ton of bumps in the road. First of all, just having a young family. I mean, I have a 4-year-old, I have a 2-year-old. I'm a big family guy. I know I'm not going to get these years back. So I spend as much time as I can with them. And that's the beauty of being an entrepreneur. I mean, I could set my own hours and time and all of that stuff. Sometimes I'm working after they go to bed or before they wake up. But when they're around, like I want to spend time with them. So that's the first sort of bump, if you want to call it a bump in the road. But the other side of it is that my wife has also had several health issues over the last 7 years, and thyroid stuff and type 1 diabetes. We've had a couple of miscarriages. It's been a huge emotional roller coaster. So I've had to take time off. And I've had to take care of the family. And so I know this is probably not the answer you're looking for, but that's life. You know, like the reality is I count my blessings that I have the flexibility to work from home, be the boss, and work whenever, wherever I want to. And I don't regret these sort of, you know, life situations, but I can tell you this, it's forced me to be more focused, because there have been times when I know, hey, I'm only going to have 2 hours to work today. What am I going to do? And that's when there's like this fork in the road. It's like, do I just do busy work and answer emails? Or do I decide on what will move that needle the most and then just do that one thing? You know, so I've had to make decisions that's made me definitely a better decision maker, act quicker, and take that, you know, 80-20 rule to heart in every aspect of my business. Because yes, I mean, right now I'm 33. There's a lot more I can do in business. In terms of my entrepreneurial journey, I know that it's something that can grow as slowly or as quickly as I have the time for. But my kids, they're growing at a constant pace. Whether I'm there or not, they're growing. And I know that I'm not going to ever regret being there for them and spending time with them when they're small. Because it's just the nature of it, right? Like they're growing, and business can grow as fast as I want it to grow. You know, and so I know my answer is not really glamorous. You know, it's not about hustle and grit and 20-hour workdays and whatever. But I know that some people out there just don't identify with that stuff either. They might feel sort of alienated by that kind of view. And so if that's you, I mean, you're not alone. Like, you can run a successful business that gives you time, freedom, and flexibility so that you can spend more time with your family. So, you know, I don't know if that kind of answers the question. I know that I know that there's more to go in my entrepreneurial journey, but I know sometimes that I need to put things on pause or on a slower pace than I would like.
Beautiful answer. Beautiful answer. And I would trust that anybody listening to this show knows that that's how you can run a business, with focusing on like the things around you as well, and not just working all the time, because that's absolutely the same thing I do. So, and I purport it all the time. It's not about hustle. It's about just spending those couple hours a day really focusing and then going and doing everything else you want to do. That's what these businesses are supposed to be for.
And I just want to end with that. I mean, it's like, you really just have to focus on that one thing that's going to make the biggest difference, because who cares if everything is perfect? It really does not have to be that way. You do not have to be perfect to be profitable. Just do the one thing that's going to move the needle, that's going to hack your growth the fastest, that's going to get you focused. So that way you can play and have fun and or take care of the family, whatever you need to do.
Exactly. Exactly. All right, Ronnie, we've talked about the business in passing. Now, can you specifically tell people who it's for, what it does, and where to find it online?
Sure. So PLR.me is our site. We help health and wellness professionals, coaches, therapists, and so on with their content creation, product creation. And we cover lots of different training. One thing that I'd like to share with your listeners today is the exact webinar template and script that's generated $250,000 for us. So it's the full script broken down, like a really detailed breakdown of how it works and what to do. It's exceptional. It's actually really our secret weapon in terms of webinar creation. It's absolutely free. You could just go to plr.me/HTE for Hack the Entrepreneur, and you'll be able to grab that webinar template there.
Very cool. Very cool. .HTE. So plr.me.
/HTE.
I love it. I love it. So yeah, PLRme, you can also go to PLRme. Well, I guess once you sign up, then you're going to figure out what everything's about.
Yeah, I mean, we have products.
That's how it works.
Yeah, sorry, I didn't even answer that question. Sorry. I'm just so excited about the webinar template. I think we've had like 15,000 people download it, and the feedback has been awesome. But we offer products like books, affirmations, articles, graphics, worksheets, assessment forms, like just a bunch of different stuff that would help a health and wellness professional create products or webinars, workshops, live events. I mean, some of our clients, they host a weekend retreat, they charge $3,000 a head, and then they're just using our content as the content that they're giving out in the handouts and in the presentations, you know, using our software tools to create all the different resources and brand it and all of that stuff. So there's anything relating to content marketing and creation of products, services for health and wellness professionals, you'll find it on plr.me.
Excellent. Excellent. I love it. So that is plr.me, plr.me/HTE is the webinar template. Are you on any social media, Ronnie?
Yeah. Facebook, facebook.com/RonPLR, and Twitter, same thing, twitter.com/RonPLR. and I don't know, LinkedIn, you just look me up. Exactly. All over the place. Yeah.
Awesome. So Twitter, Facebook, I will track those links down as well. I'll put them in the show notes on hacktheentrepreneur.com for when you're done working out, jogging, running, whatever it is you're doing right at this very moment. It'll be there waiting for you. Ronnie, once again, man, thanks so much for joining me. Thanks for sharing so openly and taking the time. And please just keep doing what you're doing, man, because it is very awesome to watch.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Sean.
When you're selling online, getting your orders out the door quickly can be tough, but it's absolutely essential to your continued success. That's why you need ShipStation.com. It's the fastest and easiest way to manage and ship your orders all from one place. Right now, try ShipStation free for 30 days and get an additional month free only if you use my promo code HACK. Don't wait. Go to ShipStation.com before you do anything else. Click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in HACK. That's ShipStation.com. Enter HACK. ShipStation. Make ship happen. I told you, didn't I? Ronnie is fascinating. That business is fascinating. It's so unique. And I don't know, I've had hundreds of guests on the show now, and sometimes it seems like businesses tend to fall into similar sort of brackets, which I don't know if that's necessarily true, but there's something truly fascinating about this business model. Right? We all talk about content creation. We all talk about content creation for ourselves and for our own businesses. And most of us have gotten pretty good at creating content, even putting it out on our own blogs, our own podcasts, our own YouTube channels, wherever it happens to be. But then we don't necessarily get an audience from that. We don't do it enough. But the idea of creating content and then selling it to other people who have businesses in place and making that your service-based business, that's pretty damn cool. That's pretty cool. So it was a lot of fun to get to bring Ronnie to the show and introduce him to you. It was a lot of fun to get to have this conversation with Ronnie for the show. But now we've reached the point in the show that I really, really, really was looking forward to and that I really like, where I get to go back and I get to listen to the conversation between Ronnie and I get to listen to it like you do. I get to listen to it as that third person. So I did. I went back and I listened to the conversation. Then I went back and I listened to the conversation again. And then I went back and I listened again. The third time back through the conversation with Ronnie, there was something he had said and I had totally missed it. Now, I don't know how I missed it. I don't know what happened to me, but I totally missed that part of the conversation. And then when I heard it this third time back, it was absolutely clear. That was the one thing that Ronnie said. Did you get it? Did you hear it? Let's do it. Let's find the hack.
Tapping into some bigger affiliates, people who are in the space selling private label content themselves, you know, getting them to promote. And that's when it really took off.
And that's the hack. Ronnie, I love this. This is the sort of the inception of the business, from coach and speaker and media personality to realizing a problem to creating it himself to getting it out there into some groups and some forums and some places, the things that we typically do to start a business, like when we're trying to sell our first things. But then he mentions something here, tapping into affiliates. He says some bigger affiliates, but just affiliates. We've never talked about this on this show, and this is episode 350 something. That is crazy, because affiliates are one of the fastest and best ways you can possibly grow your business. So you've heard about affiliate marketing. We've talked about affiliate marketing, but we've talked about it from the side of you selling as an affiliate, right? So think about it. If you have a course, if you have a piece of software, if you have a service, if it's a service, it's a commission, it's called, but it's the same thing. It's an affiliate commission. And this is how you can scale businesses, because there are people out there, no matter what market you're in, there's hundreds or thousands of companies and people out there already that have audiences, that have customers that are looking for products and services like yours. You reach out to them. They're not competitors. Stop thinking about people like competition. They're there within the same space as yours. But people buy multiple things within markets with things that they're into or things that they need, right? You don't just buy one pair of shoes. If you're really into biking. You don't just buy one bike typically. I mean, I only have one bike, but I had two up till last summer. It's something that happens, right? You're really into something. If you're into fishing, you buy a ton of fishing stuff. If you're into cars, you buy a lot of cars. If you're into clothes, you buy a lot of clothes, right? You're not in competition because you also start a clothing company and there's other clothing companies out there. So stop thinking like this and think how Ronnie, because Ronnie spent months selling a few things, but then months later, at about the 6 or 8 or 9 month mark, he said he's tapped into affiliates and he's like, that's when it really took off. This can be the same for your business. And so I'm so happy that he shared that with us because this is so essential. So an affiliate can literally be you emailing somebody who you think is a great, would be a great partner. It could be somebody with an Instagram audience that you follow them and you're like, man, they like, you could just reach out to that person and try and make them a personal deal. Or you can go and put your product onto something like Share a Sale and actually make it so that companies can find you and become affiliates. Share a Sale is just an enormous affiliate company where tons of software and actually physical products and things are on there too. But that's kind of beyond the scope of this, but it's this idea of using that, using your competition to leverage from and not thinking like them as competition anymore and then tapping into those affiliates so that your business can really take off the way Ronnie's did. Ronnie, thank you so much. All right, it's been fun. That was good. HackTheEntrepreneur.com. If you haven't grabbed a copy of my book, it's there for free. If you want a PDF copy, it's for free. If you want a physical copy or if you would like a Kindle version, then you need to go to Amazon and pay $3 or $4 for it, whatever country you happen to be in. 10,000 people now have bought the book. And I thank every single one of you if you're one of them. But for right now, I want to give it out. I got a new website. I want you to check it out. I want you to go to hacktheentrepreneur.com. I want you to give me your email address. And I want you to get the book for free if you would like. All right. It's been fun. Thank you so much for stopping by. Thanks for hanging out with Ronnie and I today. Make sure to check out PLRME, especially if you are in the health and wellness space. It could really, really actually scale up and help your business a lot. You would just want to check out what he's doing and think about maybe doing something similar within your marketplace. That's how business works. All right. It's been fun. I appreciate you stopping by. And please, until next time, keep hacking the entrepreneur.